The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Good evening, you're on the Deadline Report, or good morning, depending on whether this is live via Fresh FM or a podcast, or maybe come to the website. The dyslexic detective, but either way, it's Ben Vigen, and today I'm just looking a little bit about, we'll call this seizing opportunity out of crisis, and that a lot of sort of organisations have commented on this, and this is the idea that the fires in LA were caused by people who have intentions to actually make a profit by using that land for other purposes at the expense of the people that were the victims, and that this has all been orchestrated and organised beforehand. And most of these newspaper articles have jumped immediately, turned around and said, no, this is fake news, which is actually, it's not fake news. What it is, that's their opinion, because they actually haven't looked at any of these topics, and while they're very good at quoting things that they read online, they don't really even pay too much attention to either research or resource bases, or they want to put it a label on you, a political label on you, for actually even daring to question the official narrative, such as one of the gentlemen I spoke to recently who manages the social media site South Island Independence, and who I was talking about, I must admit I had my own perceptions. He said, yes, well, I've just spent 12 years being branded an alt-right winger, and I'm now going to spend the next 8 years under the National ACT government being branded a communist. And because again, you see these mainstream parties ultimately at the end of the day claim to be different values, but on certain things they hold the line, and they both go to church together, and questioning things or suggesting things like 50-minute cities is one of their favourite things. And it's also very funny when you see the Greens denying this. Because again, when you talk and you look at things like resilient city or resilient cities, which are basically the template for urban strategic or tactical urbanisation, is actually the terminology, and it's actually a very, very real thing, the idea of having these cities which are effectively reduce movement and travel, for the idea that this is good for the planet, and you actually go to universities and the thesis is about this. But it's what I find is hilarious about this, is that the resilient city model has came out of an idea developed by the Rockefeller Foundation, which, if you've done any research about this, on two counts, isn't it? Number one is the Rockefeller Foundation is actually the company that founded Exxon Mobil Oil, so it's supposedly sustainability, but it's actually coming from basically people who have made it their business to effectively go out and energise and monopolise the energy sector. And when you look at the oil companies, again, look at books like Seven Sisters or Crude, just to name two books on my currently on my bookshelf, they point out that, you know, companies like Seven Sisters were and the coal companies of the places, the Alapachian Mountains, you know, they were very good at actually, you know, machine gunning the workers and bringing in, sending troops to bash them up. And I've actually today been doing filming in Oamaru, and we have mock-up newspapers for the period east of Eden, which is looking at the Salinas fellas, John Steinbeck novels sent in the sort of early 1900s, which again look at a lot of things like water shortages and labour and housing crises, which are going through again. And it makes it clear that these corporate interests of that period were very, very vicious people, and there isn't really no reason for us to suspect they haven't changed. And, you know, so again, a lot of the people that sort of deny or quickly write this stuff, they actually demonstrate their own ignorance, because they're demonstrating they don't really understand a lot about history or the money trail behind the people, or the fact that a lot of the press organisations that they actually work for and who encourage an editorial, because these editorials don't just come out of thin air, they're actually brought up, and if you see the same words literally been coming up, then it's probably kind of like the subject, it's a victim itself of spin doctoring. And of these famous experts that deny 15 cities actually had a bit of self-awareness, so they might become aware of the fact that they're actually working to a set agenda themselves. However, what I'm just going to basically point out today is things that it doesn't need to be. Again, they show a little bit of too quick to just write something coffee. Oh no, that's not happening, there's no energy weapons, there's no such thing as harp or jew, and oh no, you can't trigger fire fires. Well, that you don't have to use harp or juice. What you can do is you can, as you can, I've turned around and talked to you about the Cyclone Gabriel up in the North Island. They have done large amounts of geospatial mapping through these areas using companies like Action Aviation. CEO was one of the guys that went down in the Titanic. And the one with the billionaires, and near maps, and there are, you know, articles about this, about other pilots who say, well, how come these guys can fly around New Zealand in space when we've been grounded? And we found that's how we found out about this geospatial mapping. And what it basically did was allow them to kind of, by taking sort of millions and millions of highly high resolution photos, which are all kind of put through programs to pick up patterns and so on, they can work out, for example, where if you increase the temperature by this so far, the water stream is going to come through. So this is probably an area where you shouldn't build houses, and you probably should be putting storm drains here. So despite having that knowledge, which the taxpayers paid for, that information didn't actually make it to the public arena. And we have a situation where forest companies who had once upon a time clean slash after privatisation had let it happen, and they proceeded to cause these accidents in exact areas, even though they were actually had access to that data when you and I, the public, didn't. And now, like as in Christchurch earthquake, the people in these red zones end up with only a fraction of what the houses are worth. And we've seen also in California that the insurance companies won't actually pay out, and in the case of LA, they actually counsel them beforehand. And so these, you know, the idea is that these areas get rezoned and they end up in the hands of the people who actually caused the accident and had that data to know when and where. Not a theory, an actual fact. And you don't need to use Jews, you just have to understand a little bit about tactical or urbanisation or any form of strategic planning, because that's what we're talking about. They actually go to university, they teach degrees on this stuff. And again, if the media had a little bit more education and a little bit more, maybe a little bit better read than actually the average journalist I met read, basically has the reading age of a 12-year-old, it would seem to me, or they read everything on social media and they forget this thing called books out there. But, you know, they've actually realised that actually this is not madness. And again, the Newsweek is an exception, because they actually, the mayor of, I believe, Las Vegas and another place, Newscom, was two particular mayors. In fact, it was, I'm having trouble because it was actually three particular mayors. Every time I look at the case of Hurricane Katrina, where the levees broke, when again they had been pre-warned that next time you had a major disaster, this is what was going to occur, and the result was, because that actually this event occurred, a whole bunch of people living in low social economic areas lost their land, which then got redeveloped by George Bush and his buddies and all these guys in government who had access to that data, and they ended up building them, you know, condominiums and other bits which managed to spend them a profit. So it's just, and even the mention, I think it's called Brooklyn Baby, this idea comes up where it's like, if you actually have a bit of forward advanced knowledge and strategic planning and you have data, like you can actually make a lot of money. And, you know, even there's actually the list of movies and where this has been discussed, going all the way back to Jack Nicholson's, I think the role, I want to say Little Chinatown or Chinatown, but it's a crime noir area. But again, it talks about the area where people knew where the water's going to be coming in and where it's going to run out. And again, we talk about this in the issue that Steinbeck of the Salinas Valley, of that it's very famous for its waters and its aquifers, but we also know that it had existing problems, because we know those aquifers have been increasingly getting salt water, and that's been causing problems with the growing of crops. None of this has been a secret, you know, and so you could have taken mitigation circumstances and allowed not so much intensive agricultural farming to take place in those areas, which dries out the soils and increases the risk of fire. And this, again, you see this in Australia, where they, you know, it's not again dual weapons or special high-tech weapons. I'm not saying that these, I mean, that's a whole different show in itself, but I'm saying if you don't want to take that in consideration, there are perfectly much more down-to-ground, without sensationalism, reasons to demonstrate how you can actually know where an event's going to take place and seize opportunity from crisis. So what we'll do is we'll just take a little bit of a break, and you're on the Deadline Report, and I'm going to go with, obviously enough, I'm going to go with Alan Parsons' Eye in the Sky, because again, what we're talking about is this ability, mass surveillance or Big Brother isn't just about monitoring individual people's behavior, but it's about monitoring data. And if you collect some data, you can have very forward advanced planning, and with that you can use that opportunity to seize opportunity from crisis at the expense of those who don't have that information and who are actually being basically exploited from. And this is basically what we're talking about. And again, after the show, we'll talk a little bit further about some of the places in the world where these land grabs are going on. And we're talking not small and significant amounts of land. We're talking about huge swathes of land and where this actually translates in terms of it's not like, oh, that's someone's opinion. We'll give you some hard statistics, which again demonstrate how this idea is why this journalist are actually having a problem. This is actually a bit funny because if they actually understood the scale of which this inside this sort of heist is going on, they'd probably start to say, well, okay, I get it. We're dealing with crazy psychopaths who really are quite capable of doing the most dastardly and disgusting things on the planet. War crimes, they are no less. And until our media actually start dealing with the fact that just because they can't see babies bleeding, it doesn't mean that there isn't mass murder taking place. They're on Ben Virgin on the Deadline Report.
Blind.
You're back on the Deadline Report with Ben Vidgen. So, again, one of the stories, or the points of the debunkers, made from corporations, largely written by corporations, that have a vested interest, not for you any of you people to actually know what the hell is actually going on. But they say, oh, no, there's no land grab going on. That's all a conspiracy theory. That was happening. We know about it. Well, I can't really say I'm that impressed of the average journalist that they think that there isn't a big centralisation of wealth going on right now, because the reality is, if you look at Africa, 25% of their arable land today has now been, within the last decade alone, has been sucked up by corporations. In Latin America, that figure is now as high as 75%. When you look at, for example, I was on the way to Chicago, via the Amtrak from San Francisco to Chicago, again passing through a lot of land which was now in the hands of corporates. And again, it's very interesting when you look at the history of Kansas, USA, which talks about 1920s, about the beginning of corporations effectively taking over and making it impossible for independent farmers to actually exist. But the gentleman I was speaking to actually ran a publication in Europe, in the USA, devoted to agricultural issues. And according to this gentleman, he was saying that nearly 90% of the farms in the USA today are now all controlled by corporations. It was actually sort of funny, because at one point I woke up in the morning and I was passing through Illinois, and the township that I actually passed through was the place where Radar O'Reilly was brought up. And it was all, you know, meant to be a good old potato farming place. But today that land is all owned by corporations. There are very few people that are not working for some big entity that are working the land. And so again, we look at people like Bill Gates, and again, Bill Gates is now recognised as one of the most biggest landowners in the United States. And I find it very interesting. I recommend anyone go online and spend about looking at the first three Google pages about Bill Gates' own ownership of arable land, because what you'll find is about 50% of those articles which tells you a lot about the reliability of corporate reporting, are trying to downplay his ownership and try and make him out like he's actually a really good guy for what he's doing. It's only when you read the other 50% by people that are a little bit more, and the reporting tends to be a little bit more sophisticated, that you actually realise they break it down to you how false a spin is. And actually, while he may not own on paper, there may be a corporation owns a land, and Bill Gates may only own 5% of that particular farm, but when you actually look at the other shareholders and you look at who actually owns them, eventually you start to realise that actually, okay, on paper he doesn't necessarily own that much of the farm, but it's only when you actually unpack who owns these corporations that it leads you right back to Microsoft, which again leads you right back to Bill Gates. You start to get a better picture of actually that there is he owns a much bigger share of the market than he's actually claiming. And this is the same true with BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street. You find that general rule of thumb is that you look at any shareholding, you find that they only own 20%. It's only when you turn around and start to look at who the other members of the shareholdings are, you start to realise that factual fact, by doing the model that they're doing, they're controlling a 51% shareholding interest, which effectively means that they have the dominant say about what actually goes on. And the gain in the Ukraine, we turn around and look at, I think, 71% of the arable land in the Ukraine post-war, not pre-war, but post-war is, I'll strike that from the record, 71% pre-war, and I imagine it's a lot higher since then, is owned by just 10 corporations. 9 of them are subsidiaries of BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street. The 10th and largest is actually owned by a Chinese state-owned hedge company. So that whole idea that this idea of a land grab isn't provable and it's not happening, not completely true at all. And again, we turn around and we look at we break it down into motive, method of opportunity. So the motive is that we're looking at the amount of damage or properties that are worth, that have been affected, is nearly worth $300 billion in the LA area. And this is land which, again, where I'm doing at the moment, filming, not just, actually it's north of California, it's moving towards San Francisco, but it's the same principles that we're seeing, is that in the movie, it's a Steinbeck movie, East of Eden,
and they're talking about this, these guys, and they're all about going to, you know, the Salinas lettuce company, and they're going to make money growing lettuce, and lettuce is, you know, uses huge amounts of water, and the Salinas Valley, which is also known for wine, has very deep aqueducts. But what we're now finding today is that the aqueducts, because of overusage of industrial farming, is actually threatening to actually dry out, and that's making water even more valuable, which again is driving a lot of these land grabs. So in places like the Syrian war, the outcome of the winner of that is Israel has actually moved into the Golan Heights, and that area provides something like 2/3 of the water for Syrian, I think it's Syria, Lebanon and Israel area provides the most bulk of that particular water. Then we also look at the situation happening down in Mexico, where again the very lots of the issues behind the whole controversy of the drug war, which is actually really masking the real issues, is it's again about land, and the issue there is the Rio Grande. And I imagine that in the event that Trump basically heads down into Mexico and gets involved in there, the real pretext of that will be basically taking control of the Rio Grande so that you can actually feed these big massive industrial agricultural farming farms that are doing a very good job of taking over large swathes of land that's needed for food security. And again, what we're seeing is increasingly is the food security food security is becoming very vulnerable as it has to rely more and more on food that is more chemicals than food. Again, takes us back to the petrochemical industry and to the people like the Bill Gates' financial interests. So the whole idea that this cannot be proved, that's not actually correct. And just a little side note to that, I see at one point, also the stories that were debunking was that they were saying, oh, you know, the people that believe in these stories, they also believe that there are tunnels under the greater LA area and that they've been used to abduct children, and there's no such proof of this at. Not actually true. It's the case of those guys who are writing these stories, they actually haven't gone looking for the proof, and they're actually advocating their opinion, because I can think of one example, and that's actually the Wonderland Air Force Base, which is pretty much right in the heart of where this is occurring. And in the 1960s and 70s was, you know, connected to a lot of the behavioral modification programs, which gave us things like Children of God, which in turn gave us River Phoenix, who died at the Viper Nest, the famous bar in LA. But the point is that the Wonderland, these behavioural modifications that will take care of Wonderland, yes, Wonderland did actually have an extensive tunnel network that connected to the Great LA area. So I'm not meaning to get too deep down that particular rabbit hole, but I'm just saying, again, quite often I get sick and tired of hearing opinion pieces which are basically written in newsrooms, where the journalist has got an hour to write a story about something that they don't really know too much about, and they will normally do it in a standard method, which just gets, I'm so bored of. It's like, oh, we hear a story, we've been given an editorial narrative to actually dismiss the story, not even to investigate, just dismiss it. So we'll go to a few official sources and they'll of course dismiss it because they've got no motive to actually acknowledge that it's actually taking place. And then we might go to again someone who's making a nice money racket as an academic debunking conspiracy theories or ideas that they've never really actually investigated, and then they will read something on the internet, make a general assumption about it, but without actually any talking to specialists, and voila. I mean, this is why mainstream media is failing. It's the inability to look at any issue with any depth and do any real investigation. Yes, there is a lot of people out there in the internet land that probably have gone a little bit too far down the rabbit hole, and they mix the concept of belief with proof. It's one thing to believe something. For example, I do believe that things like HAARP and direct energy weapons are deployed more frequently than we are led to believe. I certainly know that technology exists. I certainly know that technology can do everything that we're talking about. I can't prove it. But at the same time, I don't need to prove, well, in fact, it's not a case of not needing to prove it. The point is, the central argument is that there is no land grab going on. The statistics I gave you today, 25% Africa, 75% in Latin America, these are solid sources. There is no disputing right now. If you were to turn around and get out a risk board, unfold it on the map, paint it black of all areas that have been taken over by corporations in the last 10 years, most of your risk board would be painted black. And on that note, we're going to go out today with the Rolling Stones, Paint It Black.
my darkness goes. I see a line of cars and they are painted black, with flowers and my love hope never to come back. I see people turn their heads and quickly look away, like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it painted black. Maybe then I'll fade away and not have to face the facts. It's not easy facing up when your whole world is black. No more will my green seagull turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun, my love will laugh with me before the morning comes. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black. Dressed in their summer clothes, I have to turn my head until my darkness goes.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.